June 11, 2021, it's a Walk from Pedro show. You can do it. Watch for Pedro show. People, you can tell right away. I'm not in man alone mode. This is those Skype engineers from Estonia. I got Richard X. Heyman with me. Welcome aboard, Richard.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, what's happening? You got new music, right? You want to talk about it. But before we get to the new music, well, we did play some, right? We started off the show with John Coltrane doing Lush Life, Billy Strayhorn, and then Richard X. Heyman. Where are you now? Name of the song. I didn't mean that as a question. Can't copyright a song title, right? Okay. Let's check out your journey of music, Richard. Can you bring your earliest musical recollection?
Well, it goes way, way back now.
That's okay.
I knew when I was like a little toddler that I should be a drummer. I just knew it. And I don't know why or where they came from, but I just started pestering my parents, get me a drum set, get me a drum set. And slowly but surely they got me, you know, bongo drums and a timbali even and all kinds of crazy percussion. And then when I was 7, they got me a full kit. And I sat down and I just started playing.
What can I ask you? Where was this pad you grew up in?
This was in New Jersey, in Plainfield, New Jersey.
Okay.
Central Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like a little California turned the other way on the license plate. but anyway, in this pad you grew up in, Richard, was there musical instruments?
Not really. I had 3 older sisters that were getting into rock and roll, and so there were a lot of records lying around. All their partying and their boyfriends, you know, there'd be just singles and a few albums. Like, I remember discovering the Ike and Tina Turner review.
Oh, yeah.
And
Rocket 88.
James Brown Live at the Apollo. All these records were lying around.
Bootsy.
Yeah, and I got into that as a little kid. And then
well, let me ask you this.
AM radio.
Let me ask you this. Because, you know, the drummer man, before the drum set, right, you knew you were into drums. Did you get on the fucking pots and pans?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was hitting anything I could.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about grade school? Were you in the marching band or the choir,
That's funny you should mention. Yeah, I was in the marching band. And on the back of my new album, I got a picture of me playing the snare drum.
Okay, so you slung that on your then you know how to do traditional grip.
Oh, yeah. Got a good traditional grip. But then I, you know, as soon as I saw Ringo, I said, what the hell is he doing? So I learned the match grip. But I always played both, went back and forth depending on – I even switched in the middle of a song.
Yeah, why not? It's all vocabulary, right?
Yeah, there's certain times where you just want to go for the match grip so you can really hit the snare hard. But I love guys like Mitch Mitchell, Charlie Watts that use the traditional grip.
Sure. So it's Ginger Baker.
Yeah. Well, I think he was mostly match grip. But I'm sure
he would switch it up. You know, he brought a lot of jazz. You know, the other guys were more blues, and he brought in the jazz, right?
Yeah, he must have played some traditional group because he's really a jazz guy.
Yeah. And I think Ginger because he had red hair. Now, can I ask you this? First record you bought with your own money, Richard?
It's got to be Meet the Beatles.
And first gig you went and saw?
Wow. The very first gig I ever went to was, believe it or not, Neil Sedaka, the Atlantic City Steel Pier. That was the very first concert.
The band gets shirts.
I was a little tyke.
You know about this tape? There's an infamous kind of Buddy Rich type
There's a debriefing after the gig. The band gets shirts. I guess somebody came on stage in a t-shirt and he was.
Paul Anka.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I slice like a hammer. You won't see it coming. It's Paul Anka.
And the Buddy Rich Tapes. I've heard many times.
So forgive me, Neil Sedaka.
Tell you a real interesting first gig that I went to as far as rock, because in my hometown, there was a guy named George Clinton, went to my high school, and he started a band.
Started the Parliaments out of a barber shop.
So I saw.
That's where that name is. When you said Plainfield, that something rang a bell in my mind. And yeah, that's where he did Processes and shit, started the band.
And so I saw the Parliaments at this Park Hotel Annex in Plainfield, New Jersey.
You know, there was a Plainfield album. There was a band called this. They were a hardcore band. And what these guys did was, I guess Jella had a solo record or shit, and they just copied the exact cover and everything, just put their music on the vinyl. So fucked up. Anyway, what about the shit? Well, let me ask you about the drumming shit. Now, obviously, they were teaching school and stuff, that stuff for the marching and, you know, school stuff. But did you have an outside teacher?
You know, I learned a bunch of rudiments on my own. I had started some bad habits already, and I had a guy come over, and he was like, you know, just do your own thing because it's too late. But, you know, starting in
junior high. You're a kid, you're already warped. All right.
I started taking a few, you know, music courses, so I knew the basics.
Well, what about after school, not like graduating, but in the afternoon, the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band? Did you do that kind of shit?
Oh, of course, yeah. That was the evolution, you know. I started out listening to my father's Benny Goodman albums and trying to be Gene Krupa. And, you know, and the Beatles thing happened and all that, and the Stones. And so, yeah, you had to start a band. So I had a band going. And I was the drummer, and we did all those hits, all the Animals and the.
Can I ask you where you practiced? Was it at your pad, since you were the drummer man?
We did start at my house, yeah. You know, the funny thing is, we never ever practiced in a garage. We started in a living room. We did a few basements. Never a garage, but okay. We were a garage
band.
It's
okay. It's okay. They're the kind of cousins.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably some hallway bands and fucking porch bands and
yeah.
All kinds of shit. Refrigerator bands. Now, you said something about copying. So yeah, because you're, I'm probably a little younger than you, but.
Everybody is.
I was born in 57, so I'm 70s, and no one we knew wrote their own material. We all tried copying songs off the records.
Right.
You were probably in the same situation.
Yeah, we started. The first thing back then was you had to learn how to play the Ventures stuff. That's all kind of instrumental.
Yeah, do you remember those drum drop records?
Oh, yeah.
Where they wouldn't have the drums on them, so you could play along with the Ventures.
Yeah.
They dropped the drums, right? The drop.
Right. Yeah. It was so you started with your kind of surf instrumentals, and then. When the Stones hit, you started to learn the Stones' first four albums and everything you could get off of that.
Which was a lot of blues songs.
A lot of blues. You started to learn, hey, this is coming from America. You rediscover that. And then you get into Freddie King and all the blues guy, and the B.B. King and Albert King and Magic Sound, all that stuff. And then if you're lucky, you start putting a few chords together, and he said, hey, I'm going to try to write my own song.
Right, right.
You know, that came a little later to me because I was the drummer, and then I started
banging. Let me ask you about that. Is that a fucked up thing, the idea that drummers can't write songs? You know, Chico Hamilton tried to get credit in the 60s, right? Drummers don't write songs. I guess the notes are too short.
You know, it was tough because there's a lot of cross egos going around in bands, you know, like the guitar player doesn't want you messing around with his guitar. And
good point.
You know, why is the drummer picking up my guitar? So you got a lot of that So eventually, you know, I got a little kind of nylon on string guitar, first guitar, and it took me a long time to get from a G to a C, I'll tell you.
It's the next string down, but or up, actually.
Yeah, you
so,
know.
So like what you're saying is the bands, it's kind of feudalism. Everybody's got their fiefdoms.
Yeah.
Almost like corporate politics, cubicle politics, right?
That's why I ended up just doing the solo one-man band thing, because I figured every band's going to break up, and if I break up with myself, then I'll know I'm in bed.
Perfect segue to this tune, The Truth.
This is talking about Sweet Daddy. What you talking about, Sweet Daddy? What you talking about, Sweet Daddy? What you talking about, we're talking about Davey. What we're talking about Davey. What we're talking about Davey. What we're talking about Davey.
Again, I'm starting to get into it here.
That sounded really good.
Thank you.
Show. That chunk of music started with Richard X. Heyman with The Truth. Then we had Eviction, something brand new she did with, she was telling me when she was on the show last month that she came up with this invention where she put phonograph styluses on four of her fingernails. So she can get actually four out of one record, scratching on one record, she can get four trips going. And so that's, yeah, this is a little demonstration. It's called, well, I don't know. I named it what the post was. Hashtag sound manicure, hashtag nails did. Eviction. And after that, Colin Nancarrow. Now, this is somebody she turned me on to who got into experimental player piano pieces. This guy, you know, this is the first programmable shit, right? Yeah. You think about it, you know, before pewters, it just scroll with holes in it, firing off the moves. And Study for Player Piano, number 21, Canon 10. And then Decaf after that with Washed Clean. Thor Harris, Rob Halverson, with Bill Callahan doing DDCB07. Sam Locke Ward out of Iowa City was So Gone. And then SLWCC Watt, which is me and him doing a collab album last month. Sweet Davey. Buddy of his, does sax on it. Bob Bucko Jr., I Can't Live at Home in This World Anymore. Bombas Prendon from D.C. area. Miles Karaoke. This cat's been around 40 years. Recorded maybe 6,000 songs, maybe did 6 gigs. But they're still going. And then finally, Richard X. Heyman with Nearly There. Okay, let's pick up. We kind of jumped ahead to the one-man band thing because...
Yeah, let's backtrack.
Yeah, yeah. So, you guys, you're in this band in high school, or what, junior high or shit?
Yeah, starting in junior high.
Can you remember the first gig you did?
I do, yeah, yeah. It was at St. Andrew's Church. And it was just like, wow, all these little Catholic girls are digging what we're doing, and that was it.
I remember reading somewhere Pete Townsend said that's why he got in the band.
Yeah.
He said his nose was so big that this is the only way. Something like that. His interviews used to be kind of torture sessions to read anyway, but good old Pete. So it was a success.
Yeah, they seemed to like what we're doing. Right. And,
having a good first gig, what happens with the band?
Well, we just kept at it and kept doing these weekend gigs. And then we started to appear on a TV show out of Newark, New Jersey called Zachary's Disco Teen, which was like a dance, music dance, kind of like American Bandstand. And we won Battle of the Bands on that show. And that led to a record contract with Bell Records, believe it or not. And we put a couple singles out.
Richard, what was the name of this band?
It's called the Doughboys.
The Doughboys. You know, there was a, in the 80s, there was a punk band out of Canada called Doughboys. It kind of sounded like the Descendants. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about them because we used to get people confused between the two bands. But we're talking way before that.
I know. Ain't that a trip? So you win this contest, you get signed to Bell. Do you guys tour?
Well, we were too young. We were all in school still. But we did what was called the WMCA Good Guy Shows. WMCA was like the big AM station in New York City along with WABC. And so in exchange for airplay, we would play these weekend shows that they put on called the Good Guy Shows. And everybody that was charting at the time, except for the superstars like the Beatles, were on these shows. So you got to see everybody, all, you name it.
So, and by this time, you guys are writing your own tunes, right?
Not really. We're still mainly a cover band. That was kind of the sad thing for me is...
Even getting signed? Oh, yeah, because I remember those days. There'd be lots of covers, like the Animals would do House of the Rising Sun, then right away, Frigid Pink. They wouldn't copy the Lead Belly one. They would copy the Animals one.
Yeah.
It happened to Captain Beefheart with Diddy Wah Diddy.
Right. We were too young, and they just gave us a few songs to record, and we did them. Right after that, I started to write my first songs, but we missed that boat.
Did you know about the Box Tops?
Oh yeah. I'm sure we played with them. We played with everybody. Any band that had a song in the top 40 was on these shows. All the girl groups and the punk that were, you know, proto punk kind of garage type bands.
Yeah, Box Tops. They were teenagers, right? Doc Skilton, those guys. Yeah. The letter. My baby sent me the letter, right?
Yeah. That's with Alex Chilton.
Right. Later on.
Yeah, it's funny. He never sang like that again.
No. Bangkok and stuff like that.
You know, when he went on to do...
Big Star.
He had a whole different voice.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he was a boy, right? He was a teenager. So, what happens to the Doughboys?
Well, we kept on playing. We put out a second single. And then we became the house band at the Café Wa in Greenwich Village in the late 60s. And
isn't that where Jimi Hendrix would play sometimes?
Yeah, this is where Jimi Hendrix was the house band. So we played the whole summer of 68 as the house band there. And that was kind of cool.
I actually met
Jimmy in 68.
What was he like?
At Manny's Music. I walked in there.
Manny's, 48th Street.
He was in there checking out Les Paul. He was sitting playing a right-handed Les Paul. And standing over his shoulder was Frank Zappa.
Whoa.
And the store was about to close. There was nobody in there except the salesman, Zappa, Hendrix, and me. And I'm sitting there like my jaws dropped because I'm getting to watch Hendrix try out a guitar.
Well, I read that Jimmy could play upside down, no problem.
Yeah, he had a right-handed guitar. And I asked why, you know, he wanted to play a right-handed guitar. I said, did you ever try to find a left-handed Les Paul? Because, he's mainly known for playing Strats. But that day he was playing a Les Paul, and he said, no, I like it. I like the right-handed one better. He says, I like having the knobs on the top.
Yeah, he worked them with his fucking palms.
Yeah, so that was cool. And I got both their autographs, which I was a kid at that. I was like 14 or 15. So that was a big thrill.
You know that 48th Street area? It's all gone now. No more music stores.
Not one music store
left. Not one. They all got plowed. There's some down by, Chelsea? Like, I think Sam Ass went down by there somewhere in the late 20s or 30s street.
Yeah, they're all scattered around now. Got the,
yeah, because people are buying shit online. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's that's.
So you become the house band at the Wah Cafe with Jimi Hendrix experience.
Wow.
Being the house band, that means you got to play stuff that everybody knows that's current, the hit of the week or shit.
No, it wasn't like that. Did your set, but we were just on the bill every night with different acts that would keep coming through.
Okay.
That's what the house band was, just the regular band that played there. It was, I guess, what they call a residency in England.
Right.
That was a good experience. And then it all became too much. I mean, we were living together in the Albert Hotel. And speaking of, you were talking about Pete Townshend earlier. One night, there's a band called the Blues Magoos.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, and they were living at the Albert Hotel. And one night, Pete Townshend was there. We saw the Who's bus sitting outside the hotel. So we were all trying to get into the room because Pete was giving them a one-man concert on acoustic guitar.
The magic bus.
But they wouldn't let us in. So we all sat out in the hallway, the band, and we're on the floor, cockroaches all over us. And then they sent us out to the deli to get sandwiches. And when we got back, we thought this is our ticket in to watch Pete eat. But
no,
they still wouldn't let us
in. What a bunch of dicks. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. June 11, 2021, this WAP Pedro Show special guest, Richard X. Heyman. Hold tight for hour two. June 11, 2021, it's the second hour of the WAP Pedro Show.
Words will not suffice that you got taught your again.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Start off the second hour, Richard X. Heyman with the drone song. Ben Salter from Tasmania after that for Fitcher. Lucas Sabella nearby Sydney. Y is for yeast infection. Lisa Cameron and Sandy Ewan with Tigersaur. Lisa Cameron's out here doing drums with the Galaxy people, Josh Tree. Deep in the Woods 66 featuring Karen Hammond out of Dublin, Ireland with Lexicon. And finally, Richard X. Heyman. Sink or swim. So I guess that's the situation. You guys, yeah, living in the same tell room.
you got the love-hate thing going with
right, right. Bandmates. Familiarity breeds contempt that somebody wants in life.
So we broke up at the end of the decade, basically, and didn't see each other until 2000, the year 2000, when my wife decided as a surprise birthday that she was going to get the Doughboys back together. So she called them all up, didn't tell me what was happening, hired a rock club in Manhattan, had them show up. They were ready to go, and I was taken over there thinking we were just going out, and they were up on stage waiting for me, and they had the drums and everything, and I got up, we did a set.
With no practice. That, of course, it was a surprise.
No practice. It was just like being thrown in a deep pool, but it was the old bike, you know, riding the old bike. So
what's it called? They call it muscle memory.
Yeah. So we got up, we rocked out as best we could, and we had such fun that we stayed together for another 19 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And we put out four or five, I don't know how many albums, but we put a bunch of albums out over the last two decades and got a lot of attention from Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Okay, yeah, Little Steven.
We had a good time, and then that came to an end.
Well, what were you doing in between that surprise gig and then, you know, the end of the decade?
Yeah, I had my solo career going. Like everybody else, I was making demos, trying to get a deal. Wasn't happening. And then finally we decided, let's just put our own thing out. And this was like in the 80s. Put it out, and we were playing CBGBs one night, and this guy comes up to me and says, I'm a writer for Rolling Stone, and I'm going to review your record in Rolling Stone. I said, ah. So that kind of kicked everything up a notch. And from that, I got a deal with Cypress A&M. They put out my first solo album. And then from that, this guy, Seymour Stein, who had Sire Records. Yeah, he heard one of the songs being played on the radio in New York City, and he called me up at home, offered me a deal on Sire. So I made an album for Sire. And then I just started my own label after that.
Yeah,
and I've been just putting CDs out.
Now, what was it like running your own band compared to being in the Doughboys?
Well, like I said, I knew if I broke up with myself, then things weren't right. So.
Oh, yeah, I understand that.
That's the main difference.
Are you talking about the recording? Fun. Well, what about the recording process? Was it something like Prince or Stevie Wonder or Dave Grohl?
I had been experimenting with that. I was just thinking about this the other day because I remember when I was young, I somehow got a hold of a Woolensack tape recorder that I used to have in the schools, and I started to tape myself. And then one day somebody brought over this TIAC. It was called a Sound on Sound, and I couldn't believe that you could actually record yourself over yourself and sing harmony or put a second instrument, and that was what opened the floodgates for me. I was like, I know how to play the guitar and the bass and the drums and the and sing, so I'm going to try overdubbing myself. And I start doing that. And as the technology, advanced, you got the four tracks and then eight. But
I start
with the drums. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that's the way those guys did, too. They always start with the drums. But we got to give Les Paul and Mary Ford credit. They're the people who came up with that.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. I want to play Handprints.
Oh, okay.
Outside the old frontier.
For Peter's show, that chunk of music, Richard X. Heyman with Handprints, Eric Slick, Broken Down Volvo, Josh M. Robbins, Orders, My Musical Adventure, Manuel Armida, Heinbach with Creason, and finally The Greater Good, Richard X. Heyman. He's got some insights, people. When he started the one-man band, the Man Alone music-making thing, he didn't start with drums. There's a journey to that. Explain, Richard.
Yeah, well, your inclination is to start with, like, a piano or a guitar because it's a song. So I didn't even think starting with the drums. So I put the guitar part down first, and then I try to play drums to that and realize the guitar is not in time. And I start to doubt whether I had good time or not on drums because I couldn't keep up with it. And then one day it just hit me, why don't I try starting with the drums? And that's when it made sense, and then I built up from that, the layer cake thing where you put your rhythm instrument on. The one thing I do different from most people is once I got drums and a rhythm guitar, I go right to the vocals. I like to get those over with. And it also kind of gives you a sense of what other stuff to put on the track.
Yeah, and how it should be. It should how it should work with the vocal.
Yeah, because, you know, in the old days, everybody's playing live, so you're hearing everything and you're playing off the vocal, but when you're doing it like this, a lot of people don't know what the vocal's going to really sound like until the end. And I thought, that sounds backwards to me. I'm going to put the vocal on right away.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. They don't know the dynamic. Come down for the verse, come up for the chorus.
Right. So that was definitely a revelation to me, is get the vocals in there and then play around it, or, you know, arrange parts to fit in with that.
Now, as far as the technical, like the board, the knobs, did you have help, or were you man alone there too?
In the beginning, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I started trying to find somebody that had some multi-track stuff, because I couldn't really afford the good studios. So back in the 80s, I found a guy that had a four-track in his living room, and that's where I did my first album, which I ended up calling Living Room. It was recorded in the living room.
Appropriate.
And then, you know, that built up. Then I got those major label deals, so those were done out in California in good studios, and Ocean Way and
LA. Wow, Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, and Sunset Sound. So I built up to that, but then, you know, the computer thing started.
Right.
So now I'm on, you know, there was an interim where I was using ADATS. Remember ADATS?
Oh, yeah.
They were like a digital recorder, but you used VHS.
As the medium, right.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But that didn't last long, and then the computers really took over. So now I record everything in Logic Pro.
You know what did last? That ADAT standard, that's all. They use it for like eight-channel digital standard. But, yeah, all that stuff, all those tapes. And, you know,
it was crazy. And then when you wanted to have more tracks, you had to get a second machine and a third machine.
Bullshit.
It was like a Rube Goldberg thing. It was just like crazy stupid. But to answer your question, my wife is doing all the real technical stuff. I'm a Luddite. I don't really know this stuff. She engineers. She's got the whip out.
How'd she learn?
She just is smarter than me. You know, she knows how to do that stuff. So
yeah, but she wasn't born with it. She must have learned it somehow.
Well, we got Logic Pro, and she went on online, started to listen to a few.
Oh, taught herself. Okay, I understand.
Taught herself and got really good at it, and she engineers all this stuff now.
Well, that's a definite bonus. And probably she probably serves as an editor too. Like,
oh, I mean, she's got the whip out, like I said. I mean, I would sound like the Shags.
What's that Stone song? When the whip comes down.
Yeah. I mean, her whole modus operandi, as they say, is everything's got to be in time and in tune. And so she just, you know, makes me do it take after take until I get it right.
Right. The beatings will continue till morale improves.
That's how we do it.
Okay. We're at the end of the second hour, June 11, 2021, Dish Watch Speedo Show. Special guest Richard X. Heyman. Hold tight for hour three. June 11, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Oh, Tell me where you've been, what's been on your mind. Tell me where you're going, what you're leaving behind. I've seen days and I couldn't find a way. And I've seen trouble I thought would go away. Something about you turns me around. Something about you. If there's something holding you down, holding you back, hanging around, I've held to pain like tracks to train. Lately I am letting.
Pedro show start off the third hour with Choices We Make, Richard X. Haven. Trapper Soup after that was Something About You. Peter and his Experimental Sonic Machines from Tim Whole House. Plaster Men with Just a Minute. That's New York, but Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who went there? Or taught there? Billions upon billions. Carl Sagan, right? Cornell.
That's oh, yeah.
Fucking it. Alzheimer fucks me up. The End by Lewis Cole, and then finally Richard X. Heyman. Guess You Had to Be There. So tell me about this record.
The one we just Guess You Had to Be There? Or the new album?
Yeah, the new one. That's what I meant, there's a new one.
Okay.
Remember, I get these songs, and I don't exactly know where they are in the timeline.
That's it. So, yeah, Guess You Had to Be There is from my previous album, Pop Circles. That was from a couple years ago. But the new one is called Copious Notes.
Great title. That's probably how it started, right? A little notebook of lyrics or something?
Yeah, you know, just the name just came to me. It's like a phrase you always hear, you're writing copious notes in class. And then I thought, notes? That's like music. Could be music
oh,
notes.
Oh, yeah, I understand. Yeah, right, right. Well, tell us about the process you go about composing.
Well, this album, I guess, is the, for me anyway, my pandemic album, because it was all done in 2020, basically, into 2021. So here in New York, we were, you know, not on full lockdown, but pretty isolated. And after I had finished the last record, I was kind of in a funk. I didn't feel like doing any music. for a long time, and then the whole COVID thing started, and I really didn't really do any music. And then I started noodling around on the piano, and that turned into a few things. And every now and then, my wife, when she likes something she hears, she puts her head into the door of the bedroom where I am and says, "What was that?" And those are the ones that ended up on the record.
The litmus test.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the thing that we do that I really recommend to other aspiring recording artists, not that I have any great success or anything, but we do what we call the listenability test, because making music and listening to it are two different things. And people get so wrapped up in the making of it that they forget about, is this thing really listenable? And you sometimes, I've been with musician friends, they can't just listen. They got to start playing along. And I say, you know, music eventually is about listening to it. And so everything we do, we listen to really carefully before we commit to putting it out into the world. And we listen to it at the demo stage and make sure we're in the right key for the vocal, and all that kind of stuff is really important.
Why don't, would you being a drummer, man, originally, would not tune in the fucking drums, man? When I did that for my first album, I couldn't believe how things tightened up.
Mm.
Yeah, you find the key of the song, tune the drums to the fucking key of the tune.
Yeah, that's true. Especially, you know, if it's like a riff that you do it on the drums that, that's going to coordinate with, you know, the whole guitar part.
I don't know if you've ever used MIDI drums, but you can dial it. And it's like, whoa, yeah, what the fuck?
I don't. That's the one, you know, I have nothing against people using samples. You know, my only qualm is when they don't own up to it. Just, you know, say, okay, drum, these are loops or programmed drums, because a lot of people try to get away with...
But that's jive.
Yeah. You know, making people think they're playing drums or something. And as a drummer, that bothers me a little bit because...
Yeah, of course.
I'm out there getting blisters on my fingers, as they say. Because well, I got to start out in a real studio playing real drums, and I do that over the course of like a weekend. I'll do a whole, you know, 20 to 30 tracks of drums. Then I take those home to the computer. That's how we start.
Okay. I want to play Long Way Down.
Only one.
Time is nice.
Wap for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Started that chunk off with Richard X. Heyman doing Long Way Down, which is not on the new record, people. It's back. But he
played some of the new records.
Yeah, the music he gave me is a big retrospect of his whole trip.
Yeah, right there is the word.
Yeah, okay. Dan Jones and the Squids out of Kansas City after that. Gonna keep on. Kiwi Jr., Maritime Bandit, moved to Toronto. Come back, baby. John Duncan and Stefano Pelia, Obsolete and Comeback. Head Boggle with B2F plus C2. And then Julie Becker is Awesome from Are You a Cop? That's their brand new album. And finally, Incognito, Richard X. Heyman. So how long do you think you... So it was during this whole... you said it was a COVID-19 album. So did it take like a year to record?
Well, by the time I got into it, it was last summer when I started writing again and putting together some ideas. So where are we now? So, yeah, you know, it's from last summer of 2020 when we really got into it. And then we worked, but we could only work in little dribs and drabs because my wife works full time and she's the only one that knows how to even turn this thing on. So I have to wait, you know, till she's done with work and we have dinner. And so we would work a little at night each weeknight and a little bit more on the weekends. So it's a kind of dribs and drabs way to do it. But I don't know how much time, if you put it all together as you would in a regular.
Well, like you were saying, in a weekend you get, what, how many tracks were you? You were talking 30 tracks of drums in a weekend?
Yeah, well, that would be the first step. Right. Getting drums done. So we do that at a place called East Side Sound, which is a real nice state-of-the-art studio, which is literally in walking distance of where we live. So that worked out well. And then we, you know, pick and choose which songs we're going to do. We, you know, we try a lot of trial and error, do a few that don't work out.
I was going to ask you, if some shit don't work out, do you go back into the East Side and record some new drums with the new information?
No, the drums usually are okay. It's the song itself.
Okay.
You know, sometimes, you know, you have the song, you think it's your masterpiece, and then you listen to it, and you say, this is a piece of shit. You know, this is, you can't win them all. So you got to man up sometimes and say, no, this sucks. This
yeah, what well, a fisherman would tell you, you got to cut bait, right?
We do that a lot. I mean, we both got to like it. So there's a lot of times where I'm in love with something and my wife says, no, I don't like it. And so it's out.
Out comes the hook.
Yeah, you know, you got to keep everybody happy. So, but I trust her ears. She's got good ears.
Yeah, good. What about when it comes, when you get the tunes and it comes to the sequencing? Is she involved with that too?
The sequencing of the album, you mean? Order?
Yeah.
Well, we both kind of powwow. And
because remember in the days of vinyl, that was so important, man. The needle was going to go on the outside first. That's not going to go by the label.
Hey, you know, I'm an album guy, so we definitely spend some time thinking about the order of the songs, the flow and all that stuff.
Right. And now, since you broke that logjam, you got the album done and stuff like that, you think you got your creative thing going again, jump-started?
It's hard to tell. It's too early because I think I used everything up on this one. I got to start again. I got a lot of. I've been playing a lot of piano lately, so I demo kind of like instrumental piano pieces, and they can turn into songs if you put your mind to it. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Probably more songs have been written on piano than any other instrument. Where can people find you on the internet, Richard?
Well, you got your website, richardxheyman.com.
Let me tell people, richardxheyman.com.
Right, like as in Hey Man. And when the record is out for the public, it'll be in all the usual places people can buy
albums. Do you remember when that David Bowie song, Suffragette City, came out?
Oh, yeah.
It's got your name in the chorus. Name in the chorus, it's in the verses.
That's right. Hey, man.
And you know what I read about that song? That's the first one he pitched to Mott the Hoople, and they said no, so he gave them all the young dudes.
Really? Wow.
I wouldn't shit you.
That's a great song, Suffragette City.
They both are.
Yeah,
I like Suffragette City better. It's more rock and roll. And that was a great bass man, too, that guy with the big fucking sideburns. Whatever his fucking name. His name, I learned a lot of stuff off him. He ended up in Uriah Heep. It'd be a big honor. When you make the next Man Alone album, will you come back on the show? We can listen to it and talk about it, Richard?
Certainly, I'll be there.
Okay, thanks so much.
I appreciate your positive energy, and it's always great to talk to you.
Well, like the last year, man, music's a lifeline, right? Love it. People, June 11, 2021 edition of Watt Peter Show. Keep your pattern around.